Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
By the way, you know how we do mock drafts all the time? We do them live. I bring on a scout. I'm going to do a mock draft to close the show today, but it's a mock draft what I would do. A lot of these mock drafts are what I predict teams will do. In each case, I am the general manager. This is what I would do. This is who I want based on needs, based on who's available. I do have a trade in it because I think there's one team that needs to trade again. They've already traded once. I think they should trade again.
That's like your dream.
It is kind of my dream. My last segment of today is a dream. If I could draft, I just put it out there. Mark Schlereth, 3 Super Bowl rings. We get him on about once a week. Is now joining us live from Denver. By the way, I just saw a story today about Denver made a run at Matt Stafford. Listen, Vic Fangio may not be there by Thanksgiving if he doesn't win, and Drew Locke is, you know, you live in Denver. You talk about the Broncos every day. When will they make a decision? What if Drew Locke stinks in his first 5 games and goes 1-4? Will they make a trade at the deadline for like a Teddy Bridgewater, do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think they're still going to – I think they'll still, at the end of the day, they'll find a veteran quarterback, be it Teddy Bridgewater, be it Gardner Minshew. I think they'll make a trade at some point to bring in some veteran competition. And I also think that they're going to draft a quarterback, although I don't think they're going to take one at 9 overall. And I don't think they're moving up. I think, you know, I think if you read the tea leaves, Colin, and you look at their unwillingness to pay the price for Matthew Stafford, that should tell you right there that they don't want to get involved in that quarterback market at a price that's significant, right? Because I think George Payton, their new general manager, understands and realizes that this is going to be a process. This team has not been good for several years. So there's a process to building this roster to the point where the roster is competitive. And he is not going to, I guess, hamstring the franchise by trading away all those assets to go up and get a quarterback. So I don't believe that's going to happen. And you know, like I said, if you're not in the Matthew Stafford sweepstakes to get that to go, then I just don't believe you're going to do it for a rookie quarterback that is completely unproven. And there's as much a chance as failure as there is success.
Zach Wilson's a quarterback who, quote, thrives in chaos. And I've said this before, is any if you're good at something, you'll lean into it. If you're a good singer, you'll sing in the shower, in the car, whatever you're good at, you'll lean into. I get it. If you're a hunk, you'll go to the gym. You'll wear a tight t-shirt. That's the way we all work, right? You're good, you lean in. Zach Wilson's great in chaos. And I think to myself, well, John Elway could be good in chaos, but that doesn't mean he wasn't great pre-snap to audible out of chaos. Mm-hmm. When you were with John Elway for a long time, was he mostly a pocket guy and ran when he had to? Because he was in his time, he was the best athletic quarterback by far in the league. How much of the chaos was self-induced? It was John ad-libbing, and how much was O-line broke down?
Right. Yeah, I think early in his career, there was a lot of breakdown, a lot of forced. And I think that John Elway, like most players, as years go on, you become more aware of your surroundings, what it takes to win, and then you're very judicious about the times you take off and put yourself in harm's way. Like, there's a difference between thriving in chaos and creating your own chaos.
Right.
And I think you've got to be very careful with that, because I want a guy who thrives in chaos but doesn't play chaotically. And that, you know, there are guys who make big plays in chaos, but they're chaotic doing it. Those guys don't survive the long term. The guys, to me, whose default mechanism is from the neck up, the guy who makes a play, even in chaos, can manage the chaos, can slide around. The best scrambler in the world is a guy like Tom Brady, who never actually leaves the pocket, but just manipulates it, slides around in it, and still finds the play down the football field. So those are the guys that I truly want in chaotic situations. Here's what I know about problems. And this is any walk of life. Just forget football. any walk of life, as soon as you solve one problem, there will be another to take its place. It's a biblical guarantee. That's going to happen. All right. So you have to be able to thrive in chaotic situations, but you can't be chaotic in doing it. And so there's a fine line there that you have to measure. But like I said, when a quarterback tends to have a default mechanism that goes, let me rely on my athleticism, that guy won't last the long term. When he says my default mechanism is from the neck up, that guy will play for a long time.
You know Mike Shanahan. Niners have given up a bunch of picks to get to the number three pick. You know what it feels like? Mike Shanahan's in Kyle Shanahan's ear. Honestly, that's what it feels like. Am I crazy?
No, I don't think you're crazy. I think I look at the situation again. To me, when I look at the San Francisco's 49ers roster and what they have built, the guys they signed this offseason, you know, getting Trent Williams, they're going to get Nick Bosa back there. Like, they have got such a solid window or such a solid roster that they're looking at this saying, hey, man, we got a 3 or 4 year window. The way we've constructed our team with Kyle Shanahan, with John Lynch, you know, with Mike Shanahan advising, that they're looking at it like, and I don't know who the quarterback is that they're looking at, but they're looking at it like, man, if we get this position solved, because Jimmy Garoppolo, let's face it, you know, I always say, people say availability is the greatest ability. I always say responsibility to me is the greatest ability, but availability is a close second. And Jimmy Garoppolo just hasn't been available enough for them. So, you know, if they can solve that issue and have somebody who can come in and play either after Jimmy Garoppolo is moved or when Jimmy Garoppolo gets hurt and they don't fall off the map with the guys they have had in Mullins or in Beathard, who is now gone, like, that makes sense to me. Like, you've got to have somebody that you trust in that backup position that you're grooming to take over long term.
You know, Mark, when you, right, a couple weeks before the draft, and you were sitting there in Washington in Denver, and all of a sudden they could draft your position, I always understood, like, when the draft, it's almost like freshman into high school. You kind of size them up if you're a sophomore or a junior. In your history with the Broncos and the Washington football team, When all the rookies came into the first camp, could you identify very quickly, like, Kyle Pitts would walk in and you'd go, okay, that dude can play. Do you remember a couple of players, as you were a veteran offensive lineman, that walked into camp and you knew instantly, that guy could help us this year? That guy is that good.
Oh, you can, as a veteran player, you can pick a roster down to 3 or 4 guys before you ever step on the football field or on your first day of practice, I should say. When you start seeing guys play, you start seeing guys move, you start seeing guys understanding. I'll never forget late in my career, I was sitting in my locker, the Broncos, had my shirt off, just a pair of underpants on, big gut hanging over, you know, big boiler hanging over my underpants. I mean, skinny legs, you know, just out of shape, you know, typical offensive lineman, right? And there was this giant muscle pig across the way that we had signed as a free agent. This dude was yoked up, looked like a bodybuilder. And so I can't help it. I'm staring at the guy, right? And he looks at me and goes, what are you looking at? And I say, hey, no offense, but in my experience, you just have way too many muscles to be any good at playing this game. And they cut him 2 days later. I mean, he was awful. He could bench a house, but he was not a good football player. And so those are the things you start to see, how guys, the fluidity of movement, guys that are football players, you know, oftentimes in today's NFL, we're more concerned with drafting track athletes. Like, if we break out and start running 40s, I want track athletes. If we're playing a football game, I want football players. That's what I need to look for.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I had a friend yesterday said, you know, your show is, he goes, it's so much football. And I said, well, the draft now is bigger for a lot of people than the NBA, hockey, and baseball regular seasons. Now, I know those sports have a lot of fans. I watched the Dodger game for 2 hours yesterday.
Right.
But the draft is funny. It has become, everybody trades around pieces. People are super aggressive. And then there are teams like Cincinnati that never makes trades. Belichick's made 82 draft day moves. When you were in the league, Nobody made big trades, did they? Were you ever on a team that made a big trade?
No, teams didn't really. Like when I was in Washington, because Joe Gibbs believed in trading unknown commodities for known commodities. So there wasn't very often under Joe Gibbs my first 4 years that we had a first round draft choice. They always traded him away for a real player. You know, and that's what Joe believed. I'd rather have a true veteran player that already knows the game that I can count on than a young guy that I don't know if he's going to be able to play in this level or not. So that was kind of a Washington Bobby Bethard, Joe Gibbs philosophy.
Yeah.
It changed, but yeah, we didn't have a lot of big time trades.
Yeah. So Joe Gibbs was one of the great coaches of all times. He kind of believes that's the Pete Carroll less Snead thing in the NFL, which is I'd rather have Jalen Ramsey than a cornerback I don't know can play. I mean, I totally get it. By the way, what round did you go in?
10th round, 163rd overall player, or 263rd player taken, I think. It's something ridiculous, you know.
But your round doesn't even – It doesn't even exist.
It doesn't exist. Yeah, it doesn't exist any longer. Yeah, that's how. I mean, that they were itching to get me. Like, hey, man, I was like Chris Farley and Tommy Boy. It's a grade. Hey, D+. It's a grade they don't like to get.
Mark Schlereth, good seeing you, bud.
Likewise, my friend.
Yeah,
take care.
That's why they don't give those D+ out. They just don't want to give those D+ out.
I'm gonna give it out. Nobody wants it.
Yeah.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Joy Taylor with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is The Herd Line News.
Oh, Philadelphia Eagles. You know, Eagles fans think I don't like the Philadelphia or the Eagles, which is not true. I love the city of Philadelphia, actually. I've had great times there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I'm from Pittsburgh. People always think that I'm from Philadelphia, which I'm not.
So do Pittsburgh people go to Philly for the weekend?
No.
All right.
I mean, LA people don't go to San Francisco for the weekend.
No, I'm just asking. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's a common confusion. I don't know why, because, you know, I think we all have looked at a map before, but
well,
Philadelphia is on the other side of the state.
Philadelphia looks down at Pittsburgh like it's a small town.
I think just Philadelphia people and Pittsburgh people don't like to get confused for each other. But I'm sure this has happened to you before. Someone's come to like San Francisco and been like, hey, like I'm in San Francisco for the weekend. You're like, and? Like that's not, Los Angeles is very, you have to get on a flight to come and see me. When I was in Florida, people would do that. Like, oh, look, I'm in Tampa. Like that has nothing to do with me. I'm in Miami. So it's on the other side of the state. Regardless, I don't hate Philadelphia. I just think that the Eagles have completely fallen apart. And a new report from The Athletic took a deeper dive into the Eagles organization and what goes on behind the scenes. They spoke with current and former staffers who described a toxic environment with an uneven power structure. And one major point was the micromanagement of Doug Peterson. So the former head coach was reportedly forced to have meetings with Jeffrey Lurie and Howie Roseman every Tuesday, where one source says he was criticized and ridiculed for every decision he made. Another source added that they treated Peterson like a baby. And a third said that they can't believe Peterson led the team to a Super Bowl with all the bleep going on in the building. He had a 42-37-1 record and made the playoffs 3 out of 5 seasons and had a 4-2 record in the postseason. They were 7-9 before they hired him and have now moved on to Nick Sirianni.
Who's going to be a disaster? I'll just say it right now. Not rooting against him. Philadelphia's going to be a
mess. I don't root against anybody, but I wasn't impressed. So I'll say that's I guess like the nice way to say how that press conference went. I don't get it. I don't understand it. I never understand it. We talk about it all the time. I don't get it. Delegate to people who know what they're doing and let them do their job. Why do you have time to have a meeting every Tuesday with your head coach? You're not the head coach. You're the GM and you're the owner. Let Doug Peterson do what he does for a living. That's what you pay him for, to coach the team. What possible value could you be adding to someone like Doug Peterson in those meetings? Like, what are you looking at? What are you as a non-football coach doing? Now, if we're talking about the draft, if we're talking about free agency decisions,
I don't like
if we're
people
talking about like some sort of drama that's going on with the building, of course. But this is not what you do.
Well, first of all, I had a boss like that once at the other place. If you're going to call and complain about something, I must have missed all the meetings where you told me how great I was most days. It's like, don't be the boss that has 2 meetings a year and it's to complain. You don't know, you don't show up when you hit your ratings bonus. You're driving a Mercedes because my show sold out. I never see you then. I don't like people who call meetings to complain. You got to call meetings with your employees all the time,
right?
And say, hey, I really like what you're doing.
Things are doing great and things are not going
so
great.
So you can justify.
But what is it that you're meeting about? You
the
own
owner
the team.
Should never meet with coaches.
You own the team and you're the GM. What are you meeting about?
I don't like owners meeting with
personnel
coaches.
Personnel decisions, drama, free agency decisions, sure. Because you're the one signing the check, and the GM is involved in those decisions. But day to day, week to week,
I got to meet with the owner.
Well, for what? Now, look, I had heard this before, so this isn't dramatic news to me. But this is why I don't think that the Eagles are set up for success anymore.
Well,
like this is micromanagement, and this literally never works. It never works.
By the way, coaches talk. So Peterson has told everybody this. That's why they settled for Nick Sirianni. Nobody wanted to coach there because Peterson has polluted the waters and told everybody, you got to meet with the owner every Tuesday and get ridiculed. Who would want that job? Who has options in life?
Hire people who know what they're doing
and get out
and
of the
let
way.
Let them do their job. Set up the organization with a good culture, standards, respect, efficiency. Give people the tools they need to be successful and let them do their job. So the Nets have a stacked roster this season, obviously, and they have their eyes set on an NBA title. But Julius Erving is not a big fan of the way that Brooklyn has built their team this season.
They load up, man. They call it buying a championship. Lakers are known for doing that, too. They're just trying to buy a championship, man. They're getting all these pieces. They don't know at the end of the season what it's going to look like or what it's going to feel like, but they're going to be formidable.
Well, I mean, I think you got to, you know, good players cost money. If you want Damian Lillard, you probably have to spend a lot of money to get him from Portland. And that's the reality.
I mean, it does. It looks that way. You know, you have a lot of big names on both of these squads, as he's talking about the Lakers and the Nets, always talking about the Nets. I don't think you can buy a championship, though. I mean, we've seen teams put together lots of big names before. There's a whole lot more that goes into it. Now, I personally like that Brooklyn has been able to put all these pieces together and been able to make things work with the injuries, and it does seem like they're establishing a culture there. That to me is the bigger part of the puzzle. That's why it worked with the Lakers, because LeBron is somebody who goes in and establishes a culture. There's a lot of big personalities on this Nets team, but it seems like that's what it's happening there. What does worry me is about what we saw the other night. To your point, are they going to be able to handle the physicality? And they haven't actually all the three stars played together.
That's troubling. They just don't play together a lot, which again, you're going to get the first and second round is not going to.
Yeah, but that's not what they're built for.
That's right.
That's not what they're built for. So I get the criticism from fans like, oh, you're picking all the players. Like, okay, also maybe, you know, those players want to play there. Players want to play for teams where they're competing, because they also don't want to hear from you also how much they suck and how they can't get over the hump and they can't win championships. Like, you got to pick your poison. You can't be criticizing players for never winning and then criticizing for them moving. What are they supposed to do? Like, they have to manage their careers however they want to. So LeBron and Anthony Davis are getting closer to returning to the Lakers. AD will reportedly be reevaluated by the team doctors this week and could be back 10 to 14 days. LeBron slightly behind Davis in his recovery and is on track to be back in the lineup in 3 weeks.
LeBron's so lucky. The last 2 years, he got, not lucky, but a pandemic gave him a 4.5 month sabbatical. And now here, he gets a 2 month or a month and a half sabbatical.
Well, I think last year was more beneficial to him. He wasn't injured last year. That's what also the thing that played a role with Anthony Davis. Both of them are injured, and that's why they're out. So I don't look at it as a sabbatical.
I think
LeBron is getting a little bit of rest on the rest of his body.
A little.
But he is still recovering from an injury, and that's why he's not out there. They're 12-13 since Davis went out. They're 33-20 and fifth in the West. If it takes three full weeks for LeBron to return, the Lakers would have 8 games remaining in the regular season with both LeBron and AD.
Perfect.
Now, the Lakers, not similar to the Nets because they haven't had that time to build chemistry, the Lakers and AD had. So this part, only having 8 games to get back in basketball shape is more what I'm concerned about for AD than LeBron.
Yeah.
But they already had the chemistry going, so they don't have to, like, establish
that. Yeah, their chemistry's fine.
Whereas the Nets not playing together is more concerning.
Yeah, the big three for the Nets have played together in 7 total games. Last year for the Clippers, it was 13, and they were a mess chemistry-wise. You can't solve your issues in the playoffs. It's just the best coaching, the best assistants, the best players.
And you have teams game planning for you specifically every
for night. 2 weeks.
Yep.
They'll find your hole very quickly. Enjoy the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Live.
That was always
news.
What Frank Vogel did against LeBron in Miami. Frank knew, keep Roy Hibbert in the middle, force LeBron. When he loses confidence in his jumper, you're no freebies at the basket. You have to shoot your way out. And that's been LeBron's, you know, little bit of a liability, is that he will lose confidence occasionally. Hasn't done it in a while, his jumper. And Vogel's like, good, we're not giving you any freebies in the basket. So they try to move Chris Bosh out to shoot more offense, to pull Hibbert out. So if LeBron lost confidence, he wouldn't gain it four or five dunks. Like in the playoffs, they will find your liability. Teams will find it, and they'll just go after it and after it. That's what like Baylor did, or against Gonzaga. They find the weak spot on the floor, Timmy, and they just go right after him. Oh, that's what the great coaches do. All right, my mock draft. I'm the general manager of every team drafting in the top 10. What would I do? I don't care what – I'm not trying to make a draft that looks like what I think it will be. It's what I would do next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcast.
All right, 17 days until the draft. So, Joy, what I'm going to do today, top 10 draft. This is not what I think will happen. It's what I would do if I was the general manager of each team. And I'll explain my way of thinking as we go through it.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay, number one, yes, this is the Jacksonville Jaguars. This is the easiest pick, Trevor Lawrence. Great player. Urban Meyer has a history of developing offensive talent. They also have some nice pieces on the perimeter. Their offensive line needs help, but the side of the ball Urban's great at is offense. Lean into your strengths. Get your star quarterback with Southern roots. That's an easy one. Number two, Jets. I would take Justin Fields. Why? He has 8 wins against top 20 opponents. He's been on the stage, the big stage. Zach Wilson has none. Zach Wilson, small town kid. I think Justin Fields has faced the best competition. He's often been the best player on the field. He's been in big championship games. And this is a situation where I need this guy to come in and play. Zach Wilson from small town Utah to BYU. His best year at BYU was this year when they played their weakest schedule because of the pandemic forever. I would take Justin Fields. Now, I would not have spent all, I would not have traded up to 3 if I was San Francisco and given all those picks up. But since they're here, I would draft Trey Lance. Why? Because I think he has the most talent, but is not quite ready to play. And so I would sit him for a year behind Jimmy Garoppolo. Kyle Shanahan has had one quarterback who's a dual threat. RG3 won Rookie of the Year. Sit behind Garoppolo. This is a run-centric offense, heavy lean on the tight end. It's very quarterback-friendly. But this kid's ceiling is forever. It's a roofless house forever. Let him sit for a year. Come in comfortably. I think this is what I would do. I wouldn't have traded all these picks, but this is who I would take. I'm not trading all those picks to get the guy, Mac Jones, with the lowest ceiling. Atlanta, if I ran them, I'd try to trade out of 4. But they're reportedly asking for a ton. And so I would take Kyle Pitts. Offensive coach Arthur Smith, Matt Ryan, Calvin Ridley, Julio Jones, Hayden Hurst. I think you have, in an offensive league, the best grouping outside of Tampa, perhaps in the NFC. And listen, Atlanta, people from time to time can double a Calvin Ridley or a Julio. You can't do it now with a Kyle Pitts. So I think what you do is you ensure for the next 2 years your most expensive player, Matt Ryan, flourishes. On the Bengals, they brought in a right tackle. They already have a left tackle. I take Rashawn Slater. who is the Northwestern tackle slash guard, opted out 2020 but did not allow a single sack the year before. In fact, gave up one quarterback hit. They've got their left tackle. I don't need Penei Sewell, who's a true left tackle. They brought in Riley Reed, a right tackle, who's okay. You don't need a superstar right tackle. This guy protects Burrow. By the way, there's a million wide receivers in the draft. They got Joe Mixon. They've got two receivers I like. They're not pressing for a wide receiver. But there's only three great offensive linemen in this draft, and they get one of them. All right, Miami, I would trade out of the pick with Denver. Why? Because Miami's already crushed getting draft picks. They won't be as greedy as Atlanta. Trade down again. What you need are offensive linemen. Denver comes up and gets Zach Wilson, who it's closer, Denver and Utah, neighboring states. You're not going to play initially. Unlike the Jets, Zach Wilson doesn't have to go to New York City and play. He can sit behind Drew Lock. My guess is if Vic Fangio doesn't win in Wote, he'll have a new coach the following year. They'll hire an offensive coach. It's much more comforting, stays closer to home. All right, now the Lions. I would take Ja'Marr Chase. Best player available. Kenny Golladay is gone. They also got rid of Marvin Jones. They just need weapons. Listen, most people think the three best players in this draft are Ja'Marr Chase, Trevor Lawrence, and Kyle Pitts. They're the three can't misses, so they need weapons. I'd take him. Number eight, Carolina. Left tackle Penei Sewell. Sam Darnold's been sacked 30 times at least in his three seasons in the NFL. Sewell allowed one sack in 1,400 snaps at Oregon. It's the number one need for their entire franchise, and Sewell is available. Dolphins are now at 9. What would I do? This is easy. They got Will Fuller. They've got a tight end. They've got Devontae Parker. I'd go Elijah Vera Tucker. I'd go to the third best offensive lineman. It's not a reach. I think the Giants would take him at 11. Left tackle, they got it, Austin Jackson. They drafted a right tackle, second round. He's on the interior. Remember, Tua is bad when pressured. And they already went out and got Will Fuller. And number 10, easy one, Cowboys take Patrick Surtain, Alabama. Only the Lions and Titans gave up more touchdown passes. They're a mess in the back end. They went corner last year in the draft and got a good young player. He's a ball hawk. He's a playmaker. And there you go. That's what I would do with the current draft situation.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.